Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday the 29th of September 2023. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful, and your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
If you know someone who's slight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking Newspaper and the Winchester Talking Magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this phone number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. If there's a problem with your sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it as faulty. Now, the main headlines this week are: railway station is bike theft hotspot, doctor subjected to brutal victimisation, and sewing day is a success. Let's have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather.
Railway station is bike theft hotspot. Cyclists fear leaving their bicycles in the city, writes Adele Bouchard. Cyclists say they are being scared off from using their bikes to get around Winchester due to the fear of having them stolen. Winchester railway station has been highlighted as a crime hotspot, with 113 bike thefts in the past 2 years. Community action group Cycle Winchester has even advised cyclists against using the £400,000 bike hub that was installed at the station in 2016. Keen cyclist Ben Dornan from Fulflood said he will never leave his bike at the hub again and will be cycling a lot less after having two bikes stolen, each worth around £700 to £800 in the last year. Other railway users said they wouldn't dare leave their bikes at the station and instead they keep them with them on the trains. MP Steve Bryan said, "We want Winchester to be even more a cycling city than it is today, and confidence is the key to that." A spokesperson for Cycle Winchester, who asked to remain anonymous, said, "We've known for a while the covered bike racks, aka the hub, are targeted by thieves. Southwestern Railway staff also know it's a hotspot. The police don't, as a rule, investigate bike thefts or review CCTV recordings even when asked. At times, it has the characteristics of an undercover bike showroom for thieves, with little chance of being caught. Our advice is not to use the hub, but if you must park there, take an old bike and use a D-lock. The rate of theft from Winchester Station is 2.5 times higher than at Southampton, with 46 bikes recorded as being taken in the last 12 months. And without a bike, you can't cycle to the station." Cycle Winchester met the Southern Western Railway last year to discuss some easy improvements at the station, but this has not resulted in any proposals. In the meantime, the Community Action Group is waiting for the racks to be reinstated in front of the station. They were cordoned off due to broken paving. After having two bikes stolen, each worth around £700 to £800, Ben Dornan from Fulflood said he's going to cycle a lot less. His last bike was taken from the station in front of the CCTV cameras last month. Mr. Dornan even said he would watch through the CCTV videos himself, after the police said he'd been parked there too long, around 16 and a half hours, for them to review the footage. Mr. Dornan, aged 49, said, "When my bike was stolen, there were multiple broken bike locks in the hub, and a good friend of mine had theirs taken the same day from the same place. I think thieves have sheared through the bars that people lock their bikes to, so when people lock up their bikes, the chain just comes off. It's clearly unsafe, and people are regularly sweeping through and taking bikes. It's a numbers game for them, and they're winning. Winchester has a lot of people who cycle, and with expensive bikes, it's a real goldmine for these gangs. Loads of people have now turned off cycling, which is so regressive. We need a sting operation to take all the thieves out. The only people who are recovering their bikes are cyclists who track them down themselves. Although there were only 2 bike thefts from the station in August and 1 in July, there was a spike of 8 thefts in June, showing the problem is not going away. A spokesperson for British Transport Police said, "Bike theft is an issue we take very seriously, and we are always working and adapting strategies to tackle it. We regularly patrol Winchester Station, and we also hold bike marking drop-in sessions where we offer free security marking and give crime prevention tips and advice." And South Western Railway also apologised to its customers, promising to continue action to deter thieves. A South West Railway spokesperson said, "We are very sorry to any customers who've experienced cycle theft at the station. We are working closely with the British Transport Police, who continue to carry out operations at the station and host cycle surgeries in which they provide crime prevention advice and cycle marking. The British Transport Police also have information on its website about how to protect cycles. We will work together to look at other possible measures to prevent cycle theft and help customers keep their cycles safe." Winchester MP Steve Ryan said he'd been approached by several people who'd had bikes stolen from the city. "A number of constituents have contacted me about the bike thefts in the city, and I share their concern as one of them, especially around the station bike hub, which I campaigned for and opened myself a number of years ago. We want Winchester to be even more a cycling city than it is today, and confidence is the key to that. I'm pressing our excellent new Chief Inspector to bring her new community policing resources to bear here, and to South West Railway, who has a clear responsibility on behalf of their customers to nip this in the bud." There are calls for more action, and the Hampshire Chronicle spoke to cyclists at the railway station and to users of the bike hub to see what they had to say about the location being highlighted as a bike theft hotspot. Most of them regularly use the railway station for work or leisure, but said they were hesitant to use the hub or leave their bike locked up at the station, and called for extra patrols and extra security measures like key codes. One of them said, "I take it on the train, because the last one I had got stolen from Fareham, so I take it wherever I go now. If they can't take the whole bike, you know, they'll take something off it. I've got locked mine up, and I just used one of my locks, which only covers the frame and the rear wheels, so they stole the front wheel." He called for more security to be brought in at Winchester Railway Station and said he wanted to see more patrols. He said, "It's your responsibility to have a decent lock on your bike, but they provide the security and then they don't monitor it. So you just can't cope with that. Aside from having a key code, they need someone to monitor it, even if they just patrol it once an hour, just to show that someone does go in there and make sure it's safe." Stephen Lowy, 52, who works at Hampshire Cultural Trust, said he was wary of leaving his bike at the hub. "I've got a nicer bike than this one, which I probably wouldn't leave here, so I'd be a little more reluctant to put a bike which is more nickable." And at Matt Dodds, age 32, agreed. "It's not enough security. It's too easy to get through any of the available bike locks. I've got a £45 one. It'll take 20 seconds to get through it with a battery-powered angle grinder. It's not a priority crime for the police, so we're left to go and try and find our own bikes." He suggested secure housing for bikes with doors controlled by security codes.
Second headline story, please. Noel.
Yes, second headline is Doctor Subjected to Brutal Victimisation. A doctor believes he was subjected to brutal retaliatory victimisation after he whistle-blew on concerns about midwifery care and employment tribunal heard. Consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist Martin Pittman was dismissed earlier this year from the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, RHCH, Winchester, where he worked in his role for 20 years. At the Employment Tribunal at Southampton Magistrates Court, he is claiming he suffered a detriment due to exercising rights under the Public Interest Disclosure Act. The 57-year-old from South Wanston told the hearing he raised concerns about patient choice and safety, which he claimed management dismissed out of concern for the reputational damage they would cause. The former consultant, who has received the support of thousands of former patients and colleagues on social media, came under fire from the Trust's lawyer, Mark Sutton, when the tribunal began on Tuesday, September 26th. While denying claims of bullying, an intimidating demeanour and poor communication, Mr. Pittman said, "The consultant post was my dream that I worked for 40 years to achieve. Why would I do anything to jeopardise that? I wanted to make it better." A formal investigation was launched into Mr. Pittman in 2019 following a series of allegations of threatening behaviour from colleagues such as Director of Midwifery Janice McKenzie and the then newly appointed head of midwifery, Hilary Goodman. But the ex-obstetrician told the court the claims were fabricated, completely unfounded, and used by management to get him fired. Mr. Pittman said a meeting proposed by the senior managers involving midwifery leaders Chief Executive Alex Whitfield and Chief Medical Officer Lara Alloway was an assassination against him. He said, "I wasn't prepared to go into a meeting where they would all be trying to paint me in a very negative way." In a statement to the tribunal, Mr. Pittman said the merger of the RHCH with Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital NHS Trust in 2012 proved challenging due to significant differences in the philosophy of care and management style. Excuse me. He said, "I was justifiably reluctant to follow the low-risk, senior midwifery-led pro-normalisation model of care championed by our new partners." Up to the spring of 2019, Mr. Pittman said morale was deteriorating in the midwifery team and midwives had lost confidence in the senior management. He said, "Concerns including imminent and threatening resignation of our valued midwifery colleagues, increasing sickness rates, recurrent dangerously low staff levels preventing safe levels of patient care, and that we, as a consultant body, were not being appropriately involved in decision-making." Mr. Pittman states that he was elected by the midwives to be their spokesperson, which led to him raising issues with the management. He said, "I had a professional responsibility and legal duty to voice my concerns related to patient safety and to represent the views of my colleagues. This is fully supported by the Trust's own guideline relating to raising concerns and whistleblowing." In September 2019, an emergency meeting of consultants was held following whistleblowing concerns from the senior clinical midwives that Mr. Pittman believes mirrored his. He said, "As a direct consequence of exerting my professional responsibility in whistleblowing concerns, I was subjected to brutal retaliatory victimisation. Former colleagues and patients gathered outside the court. Terry Kemp, an ex-midwife and theatre nurse who worked with Mr. Pittman for 30 years, was there supporting her former colleague. Terry, 69, from Emsworth, said, 'I thought he was poorly treated, but felt sure it would be sorted out, and then was appalled that he was dismissed without any acknowledgement of any problems.'" And the hearing continues. And there's a very nice photograph of four former midwifery colleagues standing together, and all of them have got a t-shirt on, a yellow t-shirt, which with the writing on the front says, "We support Martin Pittman." And there's a big sign behind them saying, "We support Martin Pittman."
Over to Jane for the third headline story,
which is a positive one. Sewing Day is a success. More than a dozen participants attended the first public community sewing day at Bella Crafts, taking the opportunity to design and sew their bespoke blocks for inclusion in one of several memory quilts. Almost all started with no sewing experience and had never used a sewing machine before, but quickly became confident with the help of volunteers from the Wessex Quilt Makers. The session attracted several students from the Westgate School, highlighting the project's ability to engage individuals and groups of all ages and backgrounds. one block depicting two beach towels with hats, bags and flip-flops on them and a small dog nearby represented a participant's joyful memories of many happy days at the beach with my dog Tia. Another portrayed a beautiful hot air balloon with birds flying above, referencing the maker's Bristol heritage, where the largest balloon fiesta in the world is held. Those who were unable to finish during the session were able to take their nearly completed blocks home with them, either to finish in their own time or at another upcoming community sewing day. Many promised to return in another session in the coming weeks. Victoria McClure, Deputy Director of Bella Craft, said, "This project feels like it was custom made for us to participate in as a community sewing day partner. It is our passion to bring people together through creativity, and the opportunity to support an incredible cause alongside this makes it all the more rewarding." Having opened their site in Winchester nearly 4 years ago, she was still impressed by the overwhelming sense of community. She said, "We were thrilled to host the first public sewing day and look forward to seeing the fabric of Winchester come to life over the coming months." The final community sewing days will be hosted at the Winchester Bakery on October the 5th from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m, Winchester Sports and Leisure Centre on October the 13th from 1:30 p.m. until 6:30 p.m, and the Arc Winchester from 11 a.m. until 5 p.m. And this section of the article is accompanied by a photograph of a man, a mature man, shall we say, with a grey beard, sitting at a sewing machine with a huge beam on his face, obviously tackling sewing, and a lady in the background who is guiding him into how to use the machine. And attached to this is second fabric donation. St John's Winchester has received a second fabric donation towards their community project, The Fabric of Winchester. Gifted from one of their long-standing almshouse residents, Ian Goldie, said, "This fabric was my aunt's tablecloth. She used for special occasions when she entertained at the sick house where she was matron at Winchester College." Ian's fabric donation will be included in one of several memory quilts made by local volunteer quilt makers before being publicly displayed in an exhibition at the Arc in January 2024. Fabric and items of clothing which hold a special meaning to individuals, families, community groups, churches and schools can be donated to the project for inclusion in a quilt at no cost. Members of the community do not need to sew their own block or attend a community sewing day to participate in the project. Local businesses are also encouraged to donate a meaningful piece of fabric or to purchase a bespoke block, with prices starting at £60. And there is a photograph of his fabric, which is a blue and white checked tablecloth, which reminds me very much of the tablecloths of my youth.
And that concludes the headline stories. Now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, first person, Bulgarum diary, and then editorial comment. We'll end with items of general news. And I'll start with the death notices. Barton Bridden, Lily. Cherit, Hazel, nay Bert Cherit, aged 95. Emery, Bruce Emery, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester, aged 94. Hall, Eric Richard George Hall, peacefully. Langridge, Amanda Mandy Langridge, aged 57 after a 4-year battle with cancer. Maggiore, Giovanni John Maggiore, peacefully aged 85. Oakley, Reverend Robin Ian Oakley, peacefully aged 85. Pritchard, peacefully at home. Roberts, Janet Louise Roberts, peacefully, aged 86. And Webb, Margaret Webb, peacefully, aged 91. And now Heather's got a Christian comment.
Written this week by Maura Redmond and headed Those Priceless Moments. Does anyone else remember those priceless MasterCard TV adverts? They might show two people preparing for a night out. Across the pictures, sums of money would float. Tickets, £100. New dress, £50. Taxi, £10. And then you would see the two participants smiling at each other, and the caption would be, "Date night with your spouse, priceless." The overall slogan of the campaign was, "There are some things money can't buy, and for everything else, there's MasterCard." Now, this was obviously a wholly capitalist construct, with the aim of making us spend more money. And yet, there was a second message, that acceptance that there's more to life and that money is not everything. I often find myself thinking in terms of the priceless structure. I find it encouraging and helpful. So, you make a long, awkward journey to see someone, cost of your fare and several hours. You meet them in a not very good cafe and chat over weak tea and overpriced cake, an annoying £10. But you spend time with your friend, you chat and laugh and catch up. Priceless. Your children can read for themselves. They can listen to an audiobook while you get on with something else. But if you also take time out to read to them, you can share jokes and pull faces at each other. Priceless. And life is full of moments like that. And we know that we will never regret the time and effort we make meeting friends, making sure we see family, visiting someone who might be lonely. At the most extreme levels, you never know what the future might hold. You probably won't know when it's your last chance to see someone. But even without that, it's worth taking time out for others, which will turn out to be time for ourselves. We know that you can't calculate the cost of time with people. We know we can slow down and take the time to talk to someone who needs us, no matter how busy we are. It could even be just walking somewhere and looking around when it's not the fastest travel option. We're surrounded by messages that it is only money that counts and we should put economic meaning to everything. There is a cost-benefit analysis for everything we do. But actually, we don't believe that in our hearts. We do know better. Of course, we have to be realistic about money and try to keep things sensible and look after ourselves and our loved ones. But it is not the only consideration. Christianity has a straightforward message. Loving God and each other is what matters, and everything else is secondary. And the promise the churches make is that living life that makes everything better, it's not a sad second-rate choice. It will actually make you happier than making monetary calculations and will bring untold joys. It gives you a reason to follow your heart and do things that may not be the most economically sensible. Going to church, you have to plan, to travel and to set aside time. How much would that cost you? And then you will meet God and your own best self. Priceless.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk and the written address is The Editor, 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. There are 11 letters this week and Noel will start.
Yes, Alistair Scott is writing a speed query. I'm curious to know what calibrated speed measurement device David Wright was using to substantiate his claim that a roadside speed indicator in Alsford was under-reading a speed of 30 miles per hour by 2 miles per hour, Chronicle, August 31st. Quite apart from the balanced response of the council clerk, I informally measured it yesterday with GNSS and it appeared, if anything, to overread by about 0.5 mph. Alistair Scott, Byton, Alsford.
And Valerie Watnaby writes, shop memories. In response to the letter Chanel in the city last week, I can shed some light on it. The shop was Chanel, having many branches over the country. I worked there at the age of 16 in 1962 as a window dresser, each day changing three windows and then making props for the following day, having a junior to assist. The windows were splendid. The backdrop was mirrored tiles with a black glass floor. Often going to Knightsbridge for new updates and techniques, staying in a flat near Harrods, which was so exciting. Moving on to Cresta's in the square, which was very upmarket, having again the position as a window dresser. The clientele were treated like royalty. A silver tray of coffee or tea was provided. A selection of cocktail and evening dresses or day clothes were provided. This was haute couture dressing at its finest. As Penny Clamp said, ordinary mortals did not normally enter. How times have changed. And that was Valerie Watnaby, Loveden Lane, Kingsworthy.
And now another look at the past. Josie Dyson writes about a history walk. I was happy to go with a friend who'd booked two places on the Women's History Walk. It was a glorious day in Winchester, and Sue Anderson Faithful was an excellent guide, taking us all on a gentle walk through the city, showing us places associated with significant women associated with Winchester. We started with information about Emma, the Norman-born noblewoman who became Queen of England on her marriage to Ethelred the Unready and mother to Edward the Confessor. Emma owned the Winchester Manor, now known as Godbegot. We carried on through history, moving forward to the Civil War and the story of Alice Lisle and her beheading outside the Eclipse Inn after her trial at Judge Jeffreys' Bloody Assizes in Winchester. We walked through various old streets to hear about the work of the women philanthropists in the 19th century. Mary Sumner, who founded the Mothers' Union. Josephine Butler from Cannon Street, who helped young women prostitutes. Who knew Cannon Street used to be a red light district? Sue talked about the Victorian creative novelist Charlotte Young, born in Otterbourne, and Laura Ridding of the National Council of Women and Ellen Joyce and the Girls' Friendly Society. A wonderful walk and talk about so many influential women. Thank you so much, Sue.
And here's another nostalgic letter from Stuart Mariner, headed Happy Days. Penny Clamp's letter stirred some memories, chronicle September 21st. Clutching at an occasional shaft of lucidity, I think the ladies' clothes shop was Chanel, with a nearby competitor, Miss Mayfair, managed by a stunningly elegant lady in the square. And then there was Magpie in St. Thomas Street. After an hour or so at these establishments, with the lady of the moment, we would adjourn to the Market Inn for an hour's abuse from legendary host Bill Wright. Not satisfied with being rude, he would charge the equivalent of 7 pence for a Spam and Coleslaw Bap. Then it was time for a rush to North Walls or King George V playing fields to do battle with Highcliffe Corinthians, Hyde United or King Alfred Old Boys. Happy days! And the doctors were not on strike either. Stuart Mariner, Beaches Close, Pitten.
Mark Rowe writes, lend support. This Saturday, September the 30th, I will be at Winchester City Football Club to watch them play off in the Emirates FA Cup, 3 p.m. kickoff. Winchester City FC are playing Maidstone United in the third qualifying round. This match will be truly part of the magic of the FA Cup. I urge anyone who loves football or a first-time football fan to come along. Winchester City FC welcomes everyone and is truly a community club. I always look forward to the FA Cup, as I grew up watching FA Cup games with my late father. No matter who was in the final, it brought us together. Fingers crossed for Winchester City FC, and I look forward to seeing everyone, including the Maidstone United fans. And that was from Mark Rowe, Taplings Close, Week.
George Spencer adds his encouragement. Cup call. On Saturday, September the 30th, Winchester City will be hosting Maidstone United in the FA Cup third qualifying round. Although Maidstone sit in the top half of the National League South, Winchester City can beat anyone on their day. In addition, Southampton play at 12:30 p.m. Eastleigh are away and the trains are on strike. And this is the first time since 2018 that Winchester City have got this far. And the perfect opportunity to potentially host Eastleigh or Aldershot. The last time we played this round, we beat Cirencester Town 3-0 and earned a trip to Torquay. So, on Saturday the 30th, let's pack the Charters Community Stadium and cheer on our local team. George Spencer, Anstey Road, Alton.
And this is not quite so cheerful. Danny Chambers writing about dogs' danger. We absolutely need to remove dangerous dogs from our communities, but focusing efforts purely on banning breeds will not work, and has not worked since the Dangerous Dog Act came into force 32 years ago. As soon as a breed is banned, people start developing new breeds that are just as big, just as muscular, and just as dangerous. While announcing another breed ban may sound like tough action from the government, it should be noticed that under the current law, the police have the powers to seize dangerous dogs of any breed, even before they have harmed anyone. The government should focus on giving the police the resources to enforce the current law. We need to target the reason that these dogs exist in the first place. They are often status symbols, very valuable. They are bred to be intimidating, and the demand is driven by the activities of criminal gangs. Once again, equipping the police to better target these gangs would reduce the demand for dangerous dogs. The government also needs to clamp down on irresponsible breeding of dogs. If the government is serious about tackling this serious issue of dangerous dog attacks, they need to recognise this is as much a problem, a people problem, as it is a dog problem. Danny Chambers, South Down Road, Shawford.
And Brian Scott writes, Lights Link. It must be possible to link together the traffic lights at High Street, Southgate Street, and the ones at Jewellery Street, St George's Street, to get a smooth flow of vehicles in both directions and cut down the idling congestion at these junctions. And that is from Brian Scott of Southgate Street.
J.A. Maguire writes about a health hazard. Last year, at the age of 81, I was using secateurs to try and remove the brambles and nettles covering the steps between Wavell Way and Badger Farm. After speaking to a former Labour councillor, he referred the matter to the leader of Winchester City Council, following which the 2-foot gap was restored to the 10 feet it was previously. However, this year we are faced with the same difficulty, and the council has done nothing to rectify the situation. At the age of 82, I now feel unable to tackle the task myself, and with winter approaching and the evenings and mornings getting darker, it is now a health hazard and very likely to cause a serious accident to some unfortunate person. I have tried to raise the matter with the council and was told I could only contact them online. Now, this was in spite of informing them that I had no internet access and don't possess a smartphone. The suggestion then offered was that I might like to tackle the problem myself. I consider their attitude to be blatant discrimination. J. A. Maguire, Wavell Way, Stanmore, Winchester.
And Jan Warwick pays homage to a local legend. I would like to express my support for the proposal to commemorate local football legend Terry Payne, MBE, on the new George V playing football pavilion. This idea, initially raised by former City Council Janet Berry, would be a wonderful tribute to a remarkable footballer. Terry Payne's roots run deep in our community. Born in Winchester and raised in Highcliffe, he honed his skills on local pitches, playing for Winchester before making his mark as an integral part of Southampton Football Club. One of the most significant highlights of his career was in his inclusion in the 1966 England World Cup squad. Being a member of the squad that brought home the World Cup is an extraordinary achievement, and Terry is now a role model for aspiring Winchester footballers of all ages. Now at the age of 84, Terry continues to be a cherished figure in the football community. His legacy deserves to be celebrated and remembered for generations to come. The proposal to commemorate him on the new King George V football pavilion is a fitting tribute that not only honours Terry's remarkable career, but also serves as an inspiration to young football enthusiasts. I urge the City Council to give serious consideration to this proposal. It's an opportunity to pay homage to a local footballing legend who has brought glory to our city, our county and our nation. Jan Warwick, Winchester City Council, Councillor Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery Ward, Main Road, Hursley.
And Barry Sherlock writes, claims bunk. As anyone with an interest in history knows, you can't understand a person, an institution or even a company without knowing about its past. Time and time again, Henry Ford's famous claim is shown to be, well, bunk. The bumper 72-page edition of the Chronicle last week proved the point in style. The number and range of events for the Heritage Open Days Festival, directed by Nicky Gottlieb, was impressive. Who could not be thrilled by Claire Pollard's scintillating new translation of Sir Orfeo from a 13th-century manuscript in Middle English, or a courtly music in the Pilgrim's Hall, or Ryan Lavelle on the Liber Vitae written in the New Minster, predecessor of Hyde Abbey, in 1031. The shocking history of the agricultural riots of 1830 and the penalties doled out to starving workers gave the English Project and Edward Fennell a great canvas to set out political and social arguments that are still in progress. Councillor Jane Rutter was interested to know more about the effects of the riots on her home patch in the Worthies. In fact, the Worthies local history group has for the past 40 years found out a good deal about the Swing riots, though there is no doubt more to discover. One major incident involved the wife of the rector in his absence. The mob descended on the rectory and threatened her if she did not give them money. It is not surprising that when a new rectory, now Abbotsworthy House, was built a few years later, it was protected with a massive wall. A new book, called The Four Worthies, published by the group with a grant from the Hampshire Archives Trust, that I have written with the book designer Tim Underwood, says a lot more about the later history of the area. It is available from P&G Wells, where Steve Scholey wants to set up a museum. Ah, more history! Bring it on! And that's from Barry Sherlock, Marstongate, Winchester.
And that was the last letter to the editor this week. Thank you very much to all of our contributors. This week's first person is by Kimberly Barber, and Heather's going to read it.
Fireworks and good causes. It's that time of year when the evenings start drawing in, the weather gets colder and more windy, the leaves start falling and it requires a bit more effort to get up, get dressed and leave the warm and cosy house. It's only a few weeks since the kids went back to school. We've settled into new routines and everyone is just a little bit more worn out mentally and physically. The kids have already caught and spread the annual back-to-school cold. There's already been a note home about head lice, and I've heard a few whispers that the dreaded C-word is doing the rounds. Nice. We're in this now. Winter is approaching, and there's no getting away from the fact that Christmas is just around the corner. M&S and Tesco don't help with the anxiety with their aisles of Christmas goodies. I know some people like to spread the cost. I genuinely have a friend who's done her Christmas shopping. However, the vast majority surely just want to clutch on to the last glimmers of summer and enjoy autumn first. Yet it seems summer has well and truly left the building for 2023. But there are some nice parts of autumn that make the season enjoyable. Simple joys, like that lovely feeling of getting out your favourite woolly jumper. And the first test of the central heating, although if you listen to my stepdad, it's definitely not meant to go on until October the 31st at the very earliest. Also, in amongst the gloom, there are a few dates that we can look forward to, fireworks night being one of them. This year I hope to attend two fireworks nights. The one at my children's school in Swanmore, it's Swanmore Primary, is on Friday, November the 3rd. It's always a great community affair. I'm amazed at the effort that goes into this school's display. They really go all out, and the community comes together to put on a great event and raise money for the Friends of Swanmore Primary School. Of course, there's also the big event at Winchester at North Walls Recreation Ground on Saturday, November the 4th, which sees a torchlit procession from Broadway from 6 p.m. Proceeds from tickets, merchandise and donations are given to local good causes, selected by Winchester Round Table. I hope that this year the team from the Hampshire Chronicle will also be putting on their high-vis tabards and volunteering as part of our community days. Every year our parent company, NewsQuest, allows employees to volunteer for a charity or community organisation for the day and still get paid. Last year we all took turns at the Beacon, the homeless shelter in Winchester, where we cleaned, met some of the residents and workers, and really got an understanding of life at the centre. This year, with time running out, when it was said at the latest Rotary Club meeting that volunteers were still needed for the main fireworks night, I thought my team might like to get in on the action. They'll get to do something in the community at an event that means so much to so many families who attend, but that also raises money for good causes. And we might get to see some fireworks and enjoy a pint in the pub afterwards. Talking of good causes, I was at the latest Rotary Club meeting with Winchester Talking Newspaper as they were speaking about the good work they do. They've been operating from the top floor of the Chronicle office since January, but they have a 30-year history of recording an audio version of the Chronicle and delivering it to people with visual impairment across the city. They've an 80-strong team of volunteers, but it was a pleasure to meet Celia Ferguson, who's been volunteering with them for most of their operating years, even housing the recording studio not once, but twice over the course of their many moves. And it was also equally nice to meet David Farthing, the former president, and see his passion for the charity and service, as well as to listener Keith Hatter. To see more of their works, you'd need to go to the computer, you know, winchestertalkingnews.com.
Noel's going to read an alternative look at the news now, because he's got Belgarum Diary.
Yes, I've got three stories. The first one is called Donald Trump's Show Visit. Donald Trump made an appearance at a garden show in Winchester. However, the American politician was not there in person, just in presence, as an effigy made from veg won. An effigy made from veg won the animal made out of vegetable class at the annual garden show. Sorry, I read that badly. The event, which is run jointly by St Cross Garden Society and Stanmore Garden Club, was held on Saturday, September the 9th, at the Parish Hall in Back Street. Organisers said the competition was fierce across all categories, including flower arranging, house plants, cut garden plants, photography, vegetables, cookery craft, and children's classes. Mark Dodd and Damien Brown, chefs from the Chesil Rectory, said they had a challenging time judging the cookery classes, but they declared Emma Honey's raspberry jam a titan. The event was enjoyed by many, and tea was served by Jassie Dobson and her team. Myrtle Cunningham, Sheila Price, and Stuart Cunningham dazzled visitors with their entries, and the Austin families scooped the family cup. Oliver's Battery Primary School won classes with entries from their edible playground, which is sponsored by Hampshire Garden Trust. And there's a puzzling water fountain has been fixed. A fountain which had been out of action all year and puzzled plumbers has been fixed. The water fountain in Market Lane next to St Morris's Covert was raised at a City Council cabinet meeting by former City Councillor Ian Tate. He told the meeting on Wednesday, September the 13th, that it had been broken since last January. However, on Tuesday, September the 19th, Mr. Tate found that the fountain had been fixed. At the cabinet meeting, Winchester City Council leader Martin Todd said, "The water fountain is a matter of some puzzlement." A Winchester City Council spokesman said, "It was an issue with a valve that has now been resolved." And there's a picture of Ian Tate bending over the water fountain, and you can actually see the water spurting out of the fountain. Wonderful. And finally, historic home with links to Henry VIII and James Bond. One of the county's finest private homes with historic links to Henry VIII and James Bond is up for sale for £4.95 million. Grade 2 listed Colebrook House is next to Wolverley Palace and Winchester Cathedral and boasts half an acre of garden with Anglo-Saxon streams running through it. The house was originally two buildings before Henry VIII seized it during the dissolution of the monasteries. He gave all the abbey's assets to his daughter, Mary Tudor, who then used it to compensate the city for the costs of her wedding to Philip II of Spain at Winchester Cathedral. In 1890, it was bought by Dr. Ridding, former headmaster of Winchester College. He sold the house to the cathedral in 1894 for £1,500. Choristers were moved into the house in 1897 and two homes joined together. Sidney James, whose granddaughter was the writer P.D. James, was the new master of the Choristers' School in 1920 before the house was purchased by the Smithers family. In the 1950s, Colebrook House was inherited by Peter Smithers, who was MP for Winchester. He is believed to be the inspiration for the character of James Bond, having worked with author Ian Fleming in naval intelligence in World War II. The current owners bought the house from Sir David and Lady Calcutt in 2007 and have since set about restoring the home to its former glory with a host of original features.
And now we've got editorial comment, and Jane's going to read it.
And this week the editorial comment is "Cycle Owners Nil, Bike Thieves 113. Mm. It's all a bit embarrassing. A large sum of public money, £400,000, was spent on a cycle hub at Winchester Railway Station to encourage people onto two wheels. The store is undercover, and there is even CCTV to deter thieves. What could go wrong in the quest to reduce car usage and the attendant congestion and pollution? Well, the fact is that those thieves have realised there is little to stop them. The hub, opened in 2016, is isolated, sheltered, giving the thieves nice cover, and to make it worse, it seems CCTV is no deterrent. The action group Cycle Winchester is now advising people not to use the facility. Our investigation reveals there have been 113 thefts in 2 years, more than one a week, and those are the ones reported to the police. The place that should be the most secure is the opposite. Cyclists have told us they will be cycling less. This is a ludicrous position for the public authorities, who are all trying to boost cycling for a number of reasons, not least the health benefits of an active lifestyle. Either the police must be encouraged to take bike theft more seriously, or invest more and introduce security codes for access to the hub. A third choice is to remove the hub, sell the CCTV, and go back to square one.
Lighting up time. Friday the 29th of September ends at 7:02 a.m. begins at 6:49 p.m. Wednesday the 4th of October, it ends at 7:10 a.m. and begins at 6:37 p.m. Now we're going to go on to more items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
Wedding continued family's church link. It's a little bit of family history, this. A bride married in King Somben Church, just like her parents and her grandparents before her. Katie White and Jack Cullen from Sark tied the knot at a church on Saturday, September the 2nd. Katie's mum, Tracy White, said that the day was even more special, as the wedding was held at King Somborne Church, where she and her husband David were married in August 1986, and Katie's grandparents, Michael and Anne Snellgrove, were wed back in September 1962. Tracy said, "My daughter now lives on Sark, in the middle of the Channel Islands, but she always wanted to get married in King Somburn Church, because I got married there, my mum got married there, and she was baptised there, so it held a really special place in her heart." And there's a photograph of the traditional bride and groom emerging from the church, the bride traditionally dressed in white, carrying flowers, and the groom in a very smart grey suit, and smiling family around. And then there's little photographs, one of the mother's wedding, and a black and white one of the grandparents' wedding. "Everything in the church was locally sourced," said Tracy. "The floral arrangements were from local people who do things for the church, the Somborn singers, the bells and everything. We tried to keep everything as local as we could." The Church of St. Peter and Paul dates in part back to the 13th century and possibly stands on the site of one of two churches mentioned in the Domesday Book. The theme of the wedding was "My Granddad's Garden," with flowers provided by Michael Snellgrove, Katie's grandfather. Tracy said Katie and Jack had dated 10 years ago, before breaking up, but they later reconnected on social media, fell in love and decided to get married. Tracy continued, "Katie looked through my photo album and my parents' photo album because she wanted to see what the comparisons were, because it meant so much to her. And she's dressed very much similarly to her grandmother, actually. Tracy's got a similar little coronet on her head. She wanted to make sure everything as much as she possibly could mirrored some of the images and photographs she'd taken. And the most important thing was using the flowers from my dad's garden. The local people who did the church took 5 hours to arrange all the floral arrangements. The wedding itself was kept quite small, but it was all the people they wanted there, including some who came over from Sark, which was quite a journey."
Floor in parking price rise talks. "Consultation on city centre parking fee rises should have been circulated more widely," a council meeting heard. Winchester City Council came under fire for introducing the new charges in July. "Parking on a Sunday for more than 4 hours has increased from £2.10 to £17. This is an increase of £14.90 or 709.5%. The previously free overnight period from 7pm to 8am now costs £3.30. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for Climate Change, spoke at the full council meeting on Wednesday, September the 20th. Former City Councillor Ian Tate asked who had been consulted prior to the changes. Councillor Learney said, "We attended the March meeting of Winchester and District Business Strategy Group, as we were advised this was the best meeting to attend to get the full representation from the Business Improvement District, Chamber of Commerce and other business groups across Winchester. The presentation included details on evening and overnight to be introduced in July. We also engaged with Hampshire County Council. Following this, we've continued to engage with the BID team, businesses and charities." Mr. Tate asked if the consultation had been effective. Councillor Learney said, "In retrospect, clearly we should have pressed for wider circulation of the presentation amongst our business in Winchester. But I am pleased to say that although it is early days, footfall figures, are showing positive signs regarding the use of our park and walk and park and ride car parks. Congestion is the real killer of trade in our time. Going forward, we will adjust our parking system appropriately." Councillor Jan Warwick asked if the charges would be revisited. In a written response, Councillor Learney said, "We continually review the effectiveness of our parking management in achieving the aims and objectives of the Parking and Access Strategy and the Winchester Movement Strategy. Following meetings with businesses and the voluntary sector organisations that approached us and highlighted particular issues, we have undertaken targeted consultation on further improvements to the parking charges and management regime. I will be considering those potential improvements at a decision day on October the 9th.
And here we have County Council secures funding to save orchids. Nearly £100,000 has been set aside to help rare hellebore orchids to thrive. Hampshire County Council secured a £98,000 funding boost from Natural England to help with its conservation project that aims to create protected habitats for the endangered plants. Councillor Russell Oppenheimer said, "It is fantastic news that our plans to preserve rare orchids on County Council sites have been backed by Natural England." The chalkland areas of the East Hampshire Hangers and nearby woodlands already provide a home to some of the UK's scarcest hellebore orchids, with their numbers have been in decline. This project will put in place measures to protect these fragile locations and nurture the threatened hellebore orchid back from the brink of extinction. Conservation work such as this is a key priority for the County Council, enabling us to preserve our precious natural landscapes for wildlife, develop resilience to climate change, and ensure that the delicate ecosystems can spread and survive. The Nature Recovery Project aims to increase the numbers of both red and long-leaved helleborines. The red helleborine is considered one of the UK's most threatened orchid species, with an overall population of fewer than 20 plants recorded each year. The long-leaved helleborine is thought to survive at only 25 sites in England. The decline of the species in recent decades is linked to a range of factors, including woodland loss, trampling by humans and deer, and grazing by mollusks. Plans to reverse the loss of the orchids include vegetation clearance to provide more space, light and air for the plants to grow, protection for adult plants, artificial hand pollination, and the introduction of measures to help seeds to germinate. The aim also is to involve a group of volunteers to assist with the project. The Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust will take part in the project, focusing on orchid preservation at a nature reserve east of West Meon. In June, the County Council was appointed by the government to prepare a local nature recovery strategy for Hampshire, including the areas of Portsmouth and Southampton. The aim is to work with organisations and communities to improve the environment, protect wildlife and combat climate change now and in the future. And this is accompanied by two beautiful photographs, one of the red helleborine, which actually isn't red at all. It's a beautiful purple orchid at the top of a long stem. And the other is of the long-leaved helleborines, which I wouldn't even have recognised as an orchid. Beautiful patches of leaves and thin white stems with little tiny white orchid flowers at the running up and down the stems.
Carbon-neutral commercial building, a first, so it's continuing on that theme. Winchester has its first carbon-neutral commercial building. Development company Gentian recruited local contractor SM5 to build commercial units in Winnell with low energy consumption and environmental impact. And the newly completed commercial building in Moorside Road has been awarded the highest energy efficiency rating of the Energy Performance Certificate people, A+, which means the units are generating more energy than they consume and have minimal carbon emissions. Konings Car Detailing has already leased one of the two units, and founder of that firm, Michael Laskowski, said he was impressed with the energy efficiency of the building, as well as the high level of security of the site. In our line of work, security is of utmost importance. The building on Moorside Road showcases the exemplary quality and craftsmanship of Gentian. Beyond its outstanding energy efficiency, we're very impressed by the robust security features and the high-end finish and attention to detail throughout the development, which stands as a clear testament to Gentian's commitment to excellence. Gentian's managing director, Nick Eakins, said, "We are proud to deliver the first net zero purpose-built commercial building in Winchester. It has been great to work again with the SM5 team and provide new premises for such a highly regarded tenant. And there's a picture of those two men smiling, and one of them is handing the other a huge paper imitation of a key. So he's got the key to the building.
Accolade for welfare team. The animal welfare team at Winchester City Council has achieved a rare pair of awards from the RSPCA. The animal protection charity has awarded Platinum Paw Prints, one level above the previous highest award of gold, to the council both for both stray dog services and animal activity licensing. This award is presented to organisations that received gold paw prints for 5 or more years consecutively. Winchester City Council is one of the 3 councils in England and Wales to achieve platinum status for animal activity licensing alongside Westminster and the City of London. The Paw Prints Awards will be presented at a ceremony in November. Councillor Jackie Porter, Cabinet Member for Place and Local Plan, said this is an outstanding achievement for our animal welfare team, and it's wonderful to see their exemplary work recognised in such a way by the RSPCA. It's especially impressive that the council's team is one of only a handful to have achieved a platinum status for animal activity licensing in the inaugural year of the award. Well done to our dog wardens Dave and Ross and the rest of the team.
And here we have Sisters Revisit Their Escape from Poverty. Two sisters who enjoyed life-changing childhood holidays in Bishop's Waltham recently took a trip down memory lane. Some 60 years ago, Barbara Sadler and Brenda Pettitney Daniels were sent to stay with the Madgewick family. They are now eager to trace any surviving members of the family. The visit was organised by charitable organisation the Blackfriars Settlement as an escape from their London poverty. Victor, the head of the Madgewick family, was probably a lay preacher, had a partial false leg, and drove a Robin Reliant three-wheeler. He and his wife Gwen had 3 children, Ruth, Christine, and baby Elizabeth. They lived in a large house with an outside loo next to the small chapel where Victor took services and Gwen ran Bible reading sessions. Barbara and Brenda were aged about 7 and 5 when they first set foot in Bishop's Waltham. Their mother was unwell after a difficult home birth with the younger sister, Jenny. For the children, it was a magical experience. We were 2 little boisterous city girls from poor parts of London SE1 slums, really, recalls Barbara. 5 of us lived in 2 rooms on the 5th floor of a block of flats. There was no lift, and the stone stairs had no lights on the landings. They were running alive with mice and rats. We were then sent to the beautiful market town of Bishop's Waltham with trees and open spaces to a very welcoming, loving family who ran their lives in a totally different way from us. Barbara, who now lives in Southampton, hadn't thought about her time in Bishop's Waltham for years until by chance, on an excursion, she spotted the name on a signpost. This triggered a quest to revisit her past and led her to contacting the Bishop's Waltham Society to help trace the Madgewick home and chapel. After consulting with Penny Copeland, curator of Bishop's Waltham Museum, it is thought they were located in Basingwell Street, where the Christian Fellowship building is now housed. That area changed hugely in the late 1960s when the car park was built. Brenda, who now lives in Norfolk, and Barbara visited the Madgewicks another couple of times, by which time they had moved, possibly to Oak Road. The sisters recall, "We were great friends with Ruth and Christine while we were there. We think they were around our ages and showed us great kindness and were very sharing with their possessions, including sharing their hats with us on Sunday school." They also remember a summer school run by Gwen and Victor in a large field with tents and many games and competitions. And Brenda's overriding memory of Victor is his telling her that roses ate banana skins. She ventured out to the garden every day to see if some had been nibbled. Barbara believes the summer breaks had a profound impact on her. She has three daughters and modelled her parenting on the style of the Madgwicks. The sisters recently made a visit to Bishop's Waltham to try and track down their past. They would be delighted to find out if any residents remember them and would love to meet any of the three Madgwick children. If you can help, contact info@bishopswalthamsociety.org.uk. And of course, this is accompanied by a photograph of Brenda Pettit and Barbara Sadler beaming with their happy memories of their childhood in Bishop's Waltham.
£24 million waste collection deal wins approval. A new £24 million waste collection contract in Hampshire has been approved for up to 8 years. Hampshire County Council's Executive Member for Countryside and Regulatory Services, Councillor Russen Oppenheimer, approved the procurement of the new contract on Monday, September the 18th. The Council will fund £8 million of the contract from its revenue budgets. This contract, which is currently held by SUIS, will manage commercial waste collection, disposal and recycling from 829 properties, including 164 owned by Hampshire County Council. It will cover schools, as well as partner authorities such as Hampshire and Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue Service, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary OPPC, and Portsmouth City Council. During the 2022-23 contract, SUIS collected, disposed of and recycled a total of 8,902,088... an awful lot of waste. Hampshire schools spent the most on waste collection last year with a total of 1,018,499.73, followed by Hampshire County Council with £560,952.72, Portsmouth City Council with £228,748.79, and Hampshire Constabulary £127,410.39. The new contract could last up to 8 years, with a break of 6 years to coincide with a larger waste disposal contract in 2030. Viola handles Hampshire's household waste on a different contract. So the council will now put the contract out for tender and it will be awarded in early 2024.
Walker's guidebook majors on city history. A Hampshire man has combined his love of Winchester history with his enthusiasm for walking to create a guidebook. Malcolm Leatherdale, 78, from Chilbolton, near Stockbridge, has written a new guidebook for Cicerone's Short Walk series. Walkers of all abilities can now read about Malcolm's 15 selected routes across Winchester and surrounding areas, accompanied by easy-to-follow Ordnance Survey maps, local history, beauty spots and refreshment stop recommendations. Most of the walks can be completed in under 3 hours, with an average length of 4 miles, and steer clear of challenging terrain and complicated navigation. Mr. Leatherdale has spent much of his life in Winchester as a student of Peter Simmons and then as a solicitor. The guidebook writer, now retired, said, "This book has brought together my interest in the history of Winchester and Central Hampshire and my genuine enthusiasm for walking and the great outdoors. We're very fortunate to be in a special part of the world, with its unique geological and scenic qualities, although we may not always have the time to enjoy them as much as we would like. One of the principal reasons for writing the Winchester Short Walks book is that I wanted to share a selection of the delightful places we have on our doorstep. The 6 walks starting and finishing in Winchester, and the 9 out-and-back walks around the Itchen and Test Valley, are based on my own experience, drawn over a long period of time, and I hope that residents and many visitors will be encouraged to explore the area. The chalk streams in Hampshire have been described as gin clear, especially the rivers Itchen and Test, world-renowned for their biodiversity and rare habitats. From time immemorial, these iconic rivers have supported an array of elusive freshwater fish that have enthralled generations of the fly fishing fraternity, including the complete angler Isaac Walton, no less. The fact that these magnificent rivers are also set in glorious rolling chalk downland created over millions of years is the proverbial icing on the cake. In the midst of this geological masterpiece sits Winchester, a pivotal link in our history, particularly the Anglo-Saxon Kingdom of Wessex and the English Civil War.
And here we have, much loved woman died at Danger Junction. An enormously loved Winchester woman died after a crash at a notoriously dangerous junction, an inquest heard. Andrea Stoller of Denham Close died at Southampton General Hospital after the crash at the Carton Horses Junction near Kingsworthy on October the 25th last year. The inquest at Winchester Coroner's Court on Tuesday, September the 19th, heard that Mrs. Stoller, 73, and her husband, Tony Stoller, were in a red Mazda MX-5 and collided with a van while pulling out of London Road to join the A33. Mr. Stoller, who was part of the campaign to install a statue of Licorizia of Winchester outside the Ark, told the inquest it had been his wife's birthday and they were driving to Glyndebourne Opera. He said, "She was enormously liked and loved. She was so involved in so many different things and with lots of people. She was heavily involved with the Quakers, enjoyed circle dancing and swimming. She was a grandmother to 5 grandchildren. They were so important to her. Nobody had a bad word to say about her. Her death was an unspeakable blow to us and so many others. At her funeral, so many people said they wanted to be like her." Mr. Stoller told the inquest that he had suffered a head injury in the crash, but had fully recovered. However, he could not recall the events of the crash in which Mrs. Stoller was driving. He described his wife as being a confident and competent driver. Area coroner Jason Pegg read a statement from the van driver Stephen Collins. He described it as an unavoidable collision. The court was shown CCTV footage of the incident. Mr. Pegg said, "It appears that the Mazda didn't stop at the junction, pulling out into the van." A post-mortem by pathologist Dr. Adrian Bateman gave the cause of death as multiple injuries. Mr. Pegg said, "Mrs. Stoller was a confident driver. There is nothing to suggest otherwise. There were no medical reasons for the crash." The coroner gave the cause of death as by road traffic collision and offered his sincere condolences to the family. After the inquest, Mr. Stoller paid tribute to his wife, Andy. He said, "She was widely liked and valued in many local and national roles which she undertook. A qualified spiritual director, she touched for the better the lives of everyone she encountered, and such a great number of people had expressed their sense of great loss at her passing. The loss is irreparable, but the memory of all she did and the affection and esteem in which she was held by all who met her offers comfort. The junction by the Cart and Horses pub in Kingsworthy has long been contentious. Campaigners have been fighting for safety improvements for many years." And this is accompanied by 2 photos. One, a lovely photo of Andrea Stoller beaming at whoever is taking the photo inside a church by the looks of it. And the other is of the disastrous junction at the Cart and Horses with cars in all directions and none of them looking as though they're quite sure which one was supposed to be where.
New taste of Italy on offer. And there's a photograph of a rather nice looking building, 2 big bay windows, one either side of an open doorway, and above is a grey sign with La Piccolo written on it in beautiful curly writing. A new Italian restaurant is opening in New Alsford. La Piccola, which is located on Broad Street, opening its doors to the public on Monday, September the 25th. Owner Zinnie Galago said that he and the rest of the staff are excited to open the new restaurant, which will offer the opportunity to both to dine in and to take food away. He said, We've been doing this for 20, 25 years. Obviously, this is a new business, but I've had restaurants before in Bristol. I have a friend who lives around this area, and he's the one who recommended we come here. This will be a family-run restaurant, a family-run business. Zenny told the Chronicle that La Piccola will offer a wide range of authentic Italian food for customers to enjoy, whether they eat in or take away.
City Care Homes celebrates Roald Dahl Day. Residents at a Winchester care home recently celebrated Roald Dahl Day. On September the 13th, Flowerdown Care Home in Harestock Road marked the well-known author's birthday. He wrote many books for children, but also loved by many adults, including Matilda, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the BFG, Fantastic Mr. Fox, and James and the Giant Peach. He also wrote many books and short stories for adults, often with a twist in the tale. His books have been translated into 58 languages and have sold more than 200 million copies worldwide. Kate Harfield, Care Home Activities Coordinator, celebrated some of the most well-known Roald Dahl stories. Residents joined in by reading some of his books, including Going Solo, which talks about his RAF days. And Claudia Nunes, General Manager, said, "We have many book lovers living here, and they have agreed that Roald Dahl was an exceptional storyteller. Everyone really enjoyed talking about their favourite characters from his books." And there's a lovely photograph, big photograph, of an elderly woman sitting in an armchair with reading. She's got them wide open, the books. It's Roald Dahl's George... Marvellous Medicine.
George's Marvellous Medicine.
George's Marvellous Medicine. And big smiley face. Mm-hmm. Lovely.
And now care charity team at 10 Downing Street reception. A team from a Winchester charity was among a delegation of care providers at a reception at number 10 Downing Street. Brendan Care Chief Executive Officer Marianne Wanstall invited Petia Coeva, housekeeper at Brendan Care Park Road, John Debill, nurse at Brendan Care Otterbourne Hill, and Annie Boriski, General Manager of Brendan Care Stilden, to join her at the reception hosted by Social Care Minister Helen Whateley to recognise and thank representatives from the care sector. Petia said, "We had a wonderful day at number 10. I was pleasantly surprised that people from different roles in care homes, such as housekeeping, maintenance, catering and activities, as well as nurses and carers, were invited and acknowledged for the wonderful work they do." Marianne said, "We had the opportunity to meet Helen Whateley and discuss topical issues, in particular the challenges regarding local authority funding levels and the importance of funding care at a level that ensures we can pay and reward our colleagues better." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the four of them outside the 10 Downing Street with number 10 in the background. And interestingly, they're all four completely differently dressed. One lady in a T-shirt and pink jeans, one in a trouser suit with a blouse, one in what looks like a turquoise satin evening dress, and the gentleman who is in a blue suit with a tie and a white shirt.
Mm-hmm. Country pub to reopen. A Hampshire country pub is undergoing a programme of renovations after being taken over by new owners. Clive and Tanith Cummings bought the Milbury Inn in Beauworth near Alsford back in March and have taken over from the previous owner who ran the business for 17 years. The couple had previously worked together at a hotel in France before deciding to come back to the United Kingdom. And Clive told the Chronicle, "We wanted to find a quintessential English pub, and the Milbury was right in the heart of where we wanted to live. It's got enough scope and potential to do a lot more to it, but eventually. I started my life in pubs. Then I got into hotels. My parents used to own Amberley Castle in West Sussex, and I watched them convert the castle from a private home into a country house hotel. I ran my parents' business for them with my wife. Then we moved to France. We bought a Cistercian abbey and we converted it into a wonderful hotel. When we did the project, we were featured on the Channel 4 programme Escape to the Chateau DIY. The couple are planning on holding a soft launch for the pub at the end of November, after the renovations are complete. Clive said, "We're just working on phase one at the moment. It's just a nice big tidy up. And there's lots of scaffolding. The chimneys and roof are obviously being mended. We've got a few holes in roofs that we need to repair. We've got broken tiles and some very old cabling that needs to be changed, and some very old kitchen equipment, which needs changing as well." Clive added that he and his wife are very excited to open Milbury's to the public. "We've done very high-end hotels all our lives, and we want to come back to a beautiful English pub in the countryside. We'll be very much focused on local regional produce with a good kitchen and something we can be proud of and the local community can be proud of as well. It's not going to be a chain pub. It's going to be a free house and we're looking forward to it." The Milbury's is a 17th century building at the top of Millbarrow Down. That's a chalk down and formerly a Bronze Age barrow cemetery. Many other barrows can be seen above the crossroads as well.
Foundation for Woodland. As part of a 5-year commitment to nature restoration, a cosmetics company is supporting an innovative woodland project in the South Downs National Park. Estée Lauder has pledged £100,000 to the South Down project, with the global company guaranteeing a further £300,000 to be spent on other nature restoration projects throughout the UK's national parks over the next 3 years. Funding will go towards the design of an innovative woodland creation financing platform, with the aim of developing more than 5,000 hectares of interconnected native woodland habitats. The initiative is being delivered by UK Nature Restoration Facility, Revere, as a collaboration between National Parks UK and Palladium. A key element of the South Downs Woodland Initiative is that it will enable different landowners and tenant farmers of varying landholding sizes to participate in woodland creation rather than only prioritising large estates. The model hopes to create a reliable source of additional income through the sale of carbon credits and other ecosystem services. Once established, the South Downs Woodland Initiative will contribute to the UK's journey to achieving net zero by using woodland creations to store greenhouse gases. Sue Fox, president of the Estée Lauder Companies UK and Ireland, said, "We are very proud to continue our multi-year partnership with Revere and support pioneering nature restoration projects in the UK's beautiful national parks."
And here we have Wellbeing Initiative, a community partnership with health and fitness brand Everyone Active, has enabled St John's Winchester to bring to fruition a fortnightly memory wellbeing centre. Their dementia support service team welcomes people living with dementia and their carers to a supportive, relaxed and nurturing session that can include games and social activities in which people can participate. Sessions are openly accessible to all those living with dementia across Winchester and Greater Hampshire, and there is no cost to participate. Attendees do not need to register in advance, and there is no formal short or long-term commitment, with participants able to stay for as much or as little of the sessions as they would like. At a recent centre, one participant commented, "What a reassuring session. It was so great to meet everyone and learn from their experience with dementia." Since the centre was launched in October 2022, more than 30 members have benefited from the team's support in less than a year. And this is accompanied by a lovely, happy photo of three people sitting around a table, a man and two ladies, enjoying with beams on their faces some sort of game or puzzle.
Couple's £60,000 Scouts Promise. A nearly derelict activity space providing shooting and archery practice for more than 1,000 scouts is to be renovated following a massive contribution from donors and we can see them both in their red tops, green shorts, and scouting ties, beaming as they hand the money over. Colin and Viv Brooks, long-time residents of Winchester and supporters of scouting, have donated £60,000 towards the revitalisation of the activity barn at the Pinsent campsite at Teg Down. The money will be used to provide a lit, covered space so various supervised activities can continue all year round. Further funding for the project has been received by way of a grant for £38,000 from the United Kingdom Rural England Prosperity Fund 1923. So far this year, hundreds of scouts aged between 6 and 18 have taken part in activities at the facility, practicing air rifle shooting and archery in particular. The renovation will allow many more people to participate much more often. Part of the money has come from the sale of Leech Pond Copse. This was originally given to by the nation to Lord Nelson in thanks for his victory at the Battle of the Nile in 1798. This wood near Fareham was bought in 1993 by Viv's late father, Brian Brandy Blunt, who became Mayor of Winchester in 1996. Brandy championed the development of young people in his hometown of Bishop's Waltham, and during his time as mayor also became president of Meon Valley Scout District, where he stayed for 23 years until his death in 2019. Colin and Viv's donation will make a considerable contribution to the cost of the barn's renewal, which is scheduled for completion next Easter. There are also plans to add a bouldering wall should enough additional donations be received. The couple said, "We are honoured and privileged to have been able to support Winchester and our love of Pinsent. On behalf of the Blunt and Brooks families, we are fortunate enough to be able to leave a legacy to Winchester Scouts for the ongoing development, providing fun and skills training for both young people and the supporting adult volunteers who make it all happen. Pinsent was, is, and will be of great importance to the young people of Winchester through scouting."
Choir to revive long-lost songs at Theatre Royal. An a cappella group has taken on its biggest challenge yet in reviving some underloved songs that were cut from Seussical the musical before ever making it to Broadway. Choirmaster Oliver Squibb is finally fulfilling a five-year dream of having Winchester a cappella perform songs inspired by Dr. Seuss's The Lorax. The group of 37 women, ranging from 24 to 78 years old, will be bringing the tale to life with handmade puppets, choreography and singing at the Theatre Royal on Saturday, October the 21st. The choirmaster, Ollie, said, "Winchester a cappella is fabulous and they are all willing to take risks. Before I took the job here, I knew I wanted to do The Lorax. It's taken years to get the rights. We'll be some of the first people to ever perform the songs. We were looking for something to do, so it seemed perfect for this year. The Theatre Royal has been brilliant, and I'm really looking forward to bringing the community into what we do. The message of The Lorax is even more relevant now than when it was written, and I love the challenge of putting musical theatre against a cappella." Member Kate Downer joined around 6 years ago through a Learn to Sing course. Kate, 28, said, "I've always sung and been a singer. Not only is the atmosphere really good here, but when I have had a hard day at work sometimes, the last thing I want to do is to go to choir, but it always ends up making me feel better. It's the lighter part of my week. We're a community choir, but I don't know many choirs who would be able to do what we do. I'm really excited about the Theatre Royal. For a long time, we've really tried to be in the heart of Winchester. We've previously been secondary to other entertainers at other events, but this gives us a platform to show what we've got." Although everybody has to audition for Winchester a cappella, the choir has a mix of experience, including members who only ever sung at school before joining. As well as reviving the Lorax songs, the choir will be bringing harmonies from films like The Greatest Showman and The Little Mermaid and other popular hits as Somebody to Love, What a Wonderful World and Human. A cappella starts at 7:30 on Saturday, October the 21st at the Theatre Royal in Jury Street, Winchester. It's a lovely picture of the a cappella group all waving their arms in the air, obviously singing. And they're all wearing blue T-shirts and white trousers. They look very happy.
And here we have eco-friendly style tips. People in Winchester can find out more about eco-friendly fashion as the Great Green Wardrobe comes to a shopping centre in the city. The interactive display will offer practical tips on how to reduce clothes waste as part of Winchester's Green Week, which will see events take place across the city. Hampshire County Council's waste prevention team will also be on hand at set times to answer questions. The event marks Sustainable Fashion Week. Councillor Nick Adams-King, Cabinet Member for Universal Services, said, "More than 300,000 tonnes of unwanted clothes are thrown away in the UK every year, some of which have only been used a few times. This is enormously damaging to the environment and also costly to local authorities, including the County Council, as taxpayers end up picking up the bill for the disposal of this unnecessary waste. The Great Green Wardrobe is coming to Winchester to show how a new lifestyle changes that keep clothes out of the bin can make a huge difference to the planet and help people save money too. The Great Green Wardrobe will be on the ground floor of the Brooks Shopping Centre, Middlebrook Street, Winchester, SO23 8QY, opposite Primark, from Monday, September the 25th to Sunday, October the 8th. Sustainable Fashion Week is an international and online campaign.
That concludes the extracts for the week ending 29th of September 2023. Thank you to our editors for choosing the extracts. Thank you to our memory stick preparation, copying and dispatch teams. And thanks to today's readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. And I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye.